This is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox with our Africa update. The Hague hands down charges on possible crimes in Darfur, plus the latest on two big elections and Africa films and the Oscars. Joining me now is NPR special Africa correspondent Charlene Hunter-Galt. Hello, Charlene. How are you?
Hi, Tony. I'm fine. Thanks.
Let's start with Sudan, Charlene. First, war crimes charges have been handed down this week by the International Criminal Court in The Hague. What are the details surrounding that?
Well, first of all, this is not indictments, but these are the first accusations against individuals in the four-year-old Darfur conflict. The prosecutor, Luis Moreno Ocampo, investigated for 21 months and handed down 94 pages, finding reasonable grounds to believe in the culpability of two Sudanese on 51 counts of war crimes and crimes against humanity. The two who were named are a former interior minister and a military commander. And as you know, 200,000 people have been killed in that area, over 2.5 million displaced. And so these two people are the first to be accused of having had a direct hand in this carnage.
What's been the Bashir government's reaction?
Well, they have rejected these war crimes allegations. They say the two will not be handed over. They will not respect these allegations because they're not a signatory to the court. Moreover, they say the court has no jurisdiction in Darfur, and they say that the evidence that's been presented by Ocampo is all lies. Now, of course, human rights groups have applauded this and have said that what they need to do now is move more quickly up the senior chain of command and name more people as bearing criminal responsibility in Darfur.
So what's likely to happen then?
Well, I don't know. I mean, unless the UN is prepared to send in a force to go after those people in Sudan, which is not likely, probably not a lot is going to happen. I mean, they could issue international warrants for their arrest, and they can move towards an indictment. But as far as bringing them to trial, it doesn't look likely that these two are going to be handed over, certainly not by the Sudanese government.
In another story, Charlene, democracy seems to be continuing to break out on the African continent. This past week, elections held in Senegal and Lesotho. Let's start with Senegal. That country has a unique history, doesn't it? Tell us about that.
Yes, Tony, Senegal has been one of the model democracies on the continent. There's never been a coup there in a coup-ridden continent. They've had a multi-party system with civilian rule. And the president, Abdoulaye Wade, had been in opposition for any number of years before he came to power in the last election. He had 14 challengers, and he upset all of them in advance of the final declaration of the winner by saying that he had won. And some in the opposition are crying foul and fraud. But so far, international observers have said the election was free and fair.
What does a Wade victory mean for Senegal?
Well, again, that's one of those that remains to be seen. I mean, at home, Wade has faced widespread poverty and unemployment, which has been his Achilles heel in this election. There have been charges of corruption, and there are those who have accused Wade of mismanaging the country's economy. At the same time, the country has one of the region's most stable economies. Also, Wade, who's in his 80s, by the way, has been seen on the continent and elsewhere as a kind of Renaissance man. So I imagine that with the instruments of state at his command, if the opposition goes back into its place as a kind of loyal opposition, certainly not a violent opposition, there's no history of that in Senegal, I would suspect that there'd be demands on him to deal with the issue of poverty and unemployment.
There was also an election in the tiny mountain kingdom of Lesotho. Give us a little background on how a kingdom has an election.
Well, you know, there is a king in Lesotho, but there's been a constitutional government in Lesotho since 1993. The monarchy is hereditary. The king has no legislative or executive powers. So anyway, things have been relatively quiet. And this time around, the opposition got the majority of the country's constituencies, 61 out of the country's 81 constituencies, compared with the newly formed All Basotho Convention, or ABC, with 17 seats. Now, the leader is the prime minister. He's the official in the country, and he doesn't run as an individual. He runs along with his party. So, but this gives him a third term. And there have been allegations of corruption against his government, but his government is promising to increase pensions and expand free education. And this is really important because it's a very poor country of about 2 million people. Some 300,000 are infected with HIV and AIDS, 45% are unemployed, and 49% live below the poverty line. So these are very important benchmarks to hold this government accountable for in the years to come.
One last thing, Charlene. We were all glued to the tube last Sunday waiting to see how the pictures on Africa were going to fare at the Oscars. And sure enough, one of the biggies went to Forrest Whitaker as Idi Amin in The Last King of Scotland. And by now, we've all seen the movie, or at least know what it was about. So can you tell us briefly what's become of Uganda since Amin departed the scene?
After Amin, his opponent Milton Obote briefly came to power, but then he was deposed by a general who ruled for 6 months. And then he was replaced by Yoweri Museveni, who's been in power since 1986. Now, Museveni restricted activities of political parties. They could exist, but they couldn't campaign in elections or put up candidates, so they might as well not exist. Then in 2005, that ban was canceled in a constitutional referendum, and Museveni, much to the chagrin of the progressives on the continent and elsewhere, decided that he was going to run for a third term. You know, these elections in Africa now are sort of trying to get rid of the big men, the men who've stayed in power forever. But Museveni went ahead and secured a third term. Now, Museveni has enjoyed good relations with the West, despite the fact that his tenure has been marred by charges of corruption and embezzlement of public funds. But, you know, the other thing about Uganda is that it became a model in the fight against AIDS. Museveni led that himself, involving every cabinet level, involving the private sector, young people, everybody. But recently, this U.S.-sponsored abstinence programs have been criticized for failing to provide information about condoms. The president's wife is said to be a big supporter of the anti-condom campaign, along with the Roman Catholic Church, which doesn't think that condoms solve the problem, but in fact add to the problem. Uganda is negotiating with rebels in the north, Lord's Resistance Army, which has been a vicious terrorist group that's used children as soldiers and sex slaves, and that's an ongoing thing. But that's the state of Uganda after Idi Amin.
A really busy week of news coming from the Africa continent. Charlene, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tony.
Charlene Hunter-Galt is NPR's special Africa correspondent. Africa Update is a regular feature on this show.